Welcome to all. If there are any new people with us tonight in the chat, there is a link to where you can join the group if you so choose to. But you can always attend our meetings as a guest if you want. We have a pretty big agenda tonight, and later on tonight, the contents of the deck in PDF format, the audio track, and the contents of the chat window will go up on our website, courtesy of all the hard work of Alan. And we have a lot of items on the agenda tonight, so I will kick it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And if I got my controls right, you should be seeing the title slide.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, good. Right, well, we'll start off with a share, which has an unusual source this week. It's actually coming from Diesel. And Diesel is a friend of Bob Harris. So apparently, Diesel tells me that when CTV News comes on at 6 o'clock, he usually just takes a nap while Uncle Bob watches the news. But then this one night, he heard a familiar name. And it was part of the weather report or something like that. That Scooby guy, anyway. And he says, "My friend Linda." Because Matt Scooby was talking about the photo of the day. And this was from our photo guru, Linda Buskey, Misty Morning at Pinney Point. So thanks to Diesel for that contribution. And then I asked Bob to give him a little pat on the head.
Thank you, Diesel.
I say woof.
Okay, so Chris has got some stuff on AI.
Yeah, so I've taken to illustrating a lot of my presentation slides with images that I create through the Bing Image Creator, which now uses DALL-E 3. They just switched, I guess, about a week ago or so to DALL-E 3 from DALL-E 2, and it actually creates much better images than it used to. And you go there and you just have to type in a description of what you want, and it'll create a unique image for you, and you don't have to worry about copyright and things like that. An example is for a security presentation with a slide on adware, I asked for a sketch of a woman looking at a computer screen covered with advertisements, and one of the four that it came up with was this image here, which I thought was easy, an appropriate graphic to add to that particular slide, and very good quality image that it actually came up with. Next. So there are some fails on it, though. So if you go to Bing Image Creator DALL-E, which uses DALL-E 3 as the background for it, here is one that Linda came up with when she asked for sketch of a lady taking a photo of someone else at the beach. And this woman is obviously not taking a picture of somebody else. She's looks like she's taking a picture of herself. Next. And here were a couple of other examples where not only looking at herself, but looking off to the side. Next. And then, so I looked at these and I think, well, it looks like DALL-E 3 thinks that women don't know which end of the camera is which. Next. So I tried substituting a man for a lady. So I asked for a sketch of a man taking a photo of someone else at the beach. And so all of them know how to use a camera, but they're lazy because they all have to sit down. Next. And then it doesn't always think that women don't know how to hold a camera properly. Another choice here of phrase was woman taking a photo in the rain with an umbrella. And as long as you're okay with a woman having three hands as in the top left, at least they know how to hold a camera properly. Next. So my conclusion is that men who hold camera can hold cameras properly, but they're lazy and have to sit down. Next. Whereas women who look like models can hold a camera properly. A little bit of tongue-in-cheek on that. But you do have to watch a little bit about what DALL-E 3 will actually generate for you. But as a general rule, it does a very, very good job. And that's it for that.
Okay. But it seems as though chatbots still have some other problems.
Yeah, this is something that I came across this article in Windows Intelligence at Computer World, and they said be a little bit careful about using AI chatbots because they can actually be very confident and very wrong. So in this article, the person was asked, or the chatbot was asked for a link to the transcript of a Microsoft event. And Copilot, which is run by ChatGPT-4 in the background, provided a link to Microsoft's blog post and said it was under the heading transcript, and the person could click on show transcript button or see it or click on download transcript. And the person who wrote the article said, sounds great if it were true. And they actually had a back and forth argument with Copilot saying that, well, it's not there. And Copilot insisting, yes, I'm sure that the transcript and the download button exists on the page. I can see them from my end. Maybe you're using a different browser or a different version of Edge that is not compatible with the page, which was not the case. Next. So the conclusion that this author came to was that chatbots are really great at stringing together text that could plausibly be in a certain order, but they frequently spin into hallucinations, making up things that sound like they could be true and are absolutely not. And another example he gave was that if you ask Copilot, which is Microsoft's implementation of an AI chatbot in the latest version of the update to Windows, and if you ask Copilot, check for updates, it actually opens up Windows Update Troubleshooter. And the way he figures it's working is that Microsoft hasn't written a plugin that'll allow Copilot to actually go and open up Windows Update for you, but it can open up Settings Windows Update, so why not? Or it can't open Windows Update, so it can open Troubleshooter, so why not give you that instead? So kind of strange sort of thing. And that was all I had on that one.
Okay, and I think one final thing about AI.
Yeah, I have another one, and let me just paste this into the chat. So this was an interesting. Bruce Schneier is a security professional, and he writes some very intelligent stuff on aspects of security, both physical security as well as information security and system security. And this was about Claude, which is a company, Anthropic's next gen AI assistant. And somebody asked it, please summarize the themes and arguments of Bruce Schneier's book, Beyond Fear, which is a 20-year-old book. I'm particularly interested in the taxonomy of his ethical arguments. Please expand on that, then lay out the most salient criticisms of the book. And it actually came up with four central themes out of that book, four key arguments, eight ethical arguments, and eight criticisms. And Bruce Schneier actually said, the summary was pretty accurate, including the criticisms of his book. And he said that, this is 20 years ago. And so his thinking has evolved since then, and it addressed, the criticisms. But he thought it did a really good job of actually summarizing that book. So kind of neat. Some things can be done correctly, I guess.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So be cautious when you use AI systems, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, well, talking about things that don't always work that well, here's an example of Windows 10, the Start menu. And you'll notice that one of my tiles, the tile for the shutdown command, has suddenly gone dark. And this all comes about from when I used to use Windows 8.1. I could never figure out how to shut the computer down. So I found a way to do it using software and using the shutdown program. And it's in the article here that is in the newsletter, an old version of the newsletter. So I've got these two icons on the desktop, and I also have them as start tiles. But as I say, one of them suddenly lost its redness. So it turns out that the way to fix this is you right click on the tile that you want to change and go to the More option and then open the file location. And that takes you to File Explorer. And here's the entry for that menu item. If you right click on it and bring up Properties, then you have the option to change the icon. So you try and change the icon. And so if you just go and find the correct icon and select it, apply it, say okay, it doesn't work. it doesn't weld itself to the top. So what I had to do, I think this is what you have to do, you select any other icon that you want. So I chose a MS-DOS icon, applied that, and then immediately went back to properties and changed the icon again, and this time selected the icon I want, which is this red shutdown icon. And once I do that, then sure enough, my tile is back to the correct view. And that worked great for about 3 days until the restart tile went dark. So good old Microsoft, I don't know what it's doing, but it's trying to drive me nuts by switching these things off one by one. Good job I don't use Windows all that much. Okay, anyway, if you have a problem with tiles, that's one way to fix the icon or the image that's being used on the actual tile. But it may not last forever. Okay, Chris has got some stuff on extending the battery life, which comes from a posting from Tom.
Yeah, so thanks much to Tom for posting this information into the user forum. Just a reminder that if you are not a member of the user forum, rather than getting selective information, maybe covered here at Q&A as well, you can also get all this great information as it comes hot off the press. So some of the information that Tom posted, it came from a number of different articles. So this one talked about setting a battery charge threshold, and it said that most modern laptops, they won't overcharge a device. So there's no danger of that. But if the battery remains at 100% charge all the time, so you plug it in, you just leave it plugged in all the time, it can eventually reduce the battery longevity. So eventually you get down so the battery will hold less and less of a charge. Eventually you get to the point where you have to have it plugged in, or it won't even start up. The article talked about the fact that many laptops out there, especially the name brand ones, Lenovo, HP, MSI, Dell, so forth, they have a built-in battery charge limiter to try to maximize the battery runtime. So they will not charge the battery typically to 100%, or at least they let you set it so that it won't charge it to 100%, and it might charge it to 80% or 75% or something like that. Next. So what about other devices? So Android phones, you could install AccuBattery, and this is a recommendation from Tom directly. And this allows you to monitor and set an alarm so that when the battery reaches a given level, you can have it give you an alarm. So you can then go and turn off the charger on that, and you can set whatever you want, 72% or 83% or whatever you want. He also pointed out that e-bikes and other lithium-ion batteries, the charge rate actually slows down when it gets to about 80%. So what you could do is you can install a piece of hardware in between your battery and the charger, and you can actually monitor it so when it gets to that point where the charge rate's slowing, then you know to actually unplug it or stop charging it. Next. So other devices, headphones, Bluetooth speakers, and so forth that have built-in batteries, typically they just charge through a USB connection. So what you can do is you can actually monitor the charge current versus the USB meter. I included a link here to a search at Amazon for these devices. They can be had for like a couple of bucks each, so they're really, really cheap. And so you can monitor that, and as your device gets to a certain charge, or the charge goes down, the current, then you can unplug it, figuring that, okay, it's getting pretty close to the topped up, and so stop it from going right to the 100%. He suggested that standalone lithium batteries that you just drop into other devices. He suggests charge it to 100% for the convenience of that, because they are pretty cheap to replace. So once they get to that point where they're no longer holding a charge, just replace the batteries. But if you have a device where the battery is actually embedded in the device and you can't replace it or very difficult to replace, then you can probably prolong the device life 3 to 8 times if you can put up with charging it more often. So charge to 100% when you need to, but charge it to less than 100% when you don't need it to be charged up all the way, and that will extend the life of the device. Next. And so in summary, batteries in regular use like to be charged up to 60 to 80% charge level. Batteries in long-term storage, you should charge it to about 40%, and then it'll last longer over time. Batteries really hate to be drained completely, so 0 to 15% charge is really not good for the longevity of the battery, and there's more information about lithium-ion-based batteries and how to prolong the life of them at that URL, and all those URLs are all posted into the chat. That's all Tom had for that. So thanks again, Tom, for that information. It was great.
Thanks, Chris, for summarizing it for us. And just going back to the Windows 10 tile problem, Jeff reminds me in the chat that there's a third-party product called Tile Iconifier. And if I remember rightly, Jeff, we featured that one in a previous Q&A. So I'll have to go back and have a little look at that, and maybe it'll do a better job than my manual method. Okay, so next up we have a follow-up on the green bar of death. And I'd said that Chris and I couldn't reproduce this issue. Of course I was wrong. Microsoft decided that my system was due for a green bar of death. And here it is in all its splendor. And you probably can't read the text, so let's have a little look here. It has an archive file, OPCUG, WordPress, which is the website. This is an archive of the various Q&A presentations, essentially. And you can see that this file right here is not accessible, and the file name, directory name or volume label syntax appears to be incorrect. Well, I can understand that because none of my files are actually named anything like these names on the screen here, which File Explorer seems to think exist. But the problem's even worse than that, because if I go to the properties of this WP directory, you'll see that there are 65.6 gigabytes of files in this folder, which is amazing since this is an SD card and it's an 8 gigabyte SD card. So how File Explorer found more than 60 gigabytes of files on an 8 gigabyte disk is kind of beyond me. Well, it tells you that there's something really badly wrong with the indexing system on this drive or in this folder. So no problem. I just delete the folders and the files. So I right click on the file and I say delete, and it says, are you sure you want to put, oh yes, I'm sure I want to delete it. But when I go back to the folder, all the files are still there, including the one I just tried to delete. So at Windows, it has a problem with the files and the folders, and it has another problem that it won't delete the files and the folders. So I thought, no problem. My go-to tool for this problem is, if it doesn't work in Windows, it's bound to work in Linux. So I just boot into my dual boot Linux side of the box, open up the folder, and oops, Linux can't read the folder either, which is a bit of a problem now. And I guess what that tells you is that there really is a problem on the disk. It's the disk problem here, not just a software problem. So neither operating system can make any sense of what the disk is trying to tell it. So the second tool in the box is basically just reformat the folder I reformat the whole card. It's really just a backup system anyway. So I reformat it and then let the backup run automatically, and it basically repopulates all the backup files. So that's my answer to the green bar of death in that particular case. An interesting problem. I got no idea I've never seen that before in a number of years using these software products, and I had no idea what happened, but that's my fix for it. So as Chris says, don't give up.
Yeah, so this is a cautionary tale, I guess, to people that we shouldn't put up with bad things happening that are the caused by other people, in particular software manufacturers or software authors. So very recently I installed the latest PowerToy updates, as I am wont to do when a new one comes out. I just go, yes, of course I want all the newest toys and newest bug fixes and things like that. Unfortunately, when I updated to version 0.74.1, I immediately had problems. And some programs, and I would go so far as to say almost all programs on my computer, all of a sudden became extremely slow to load, like minutes long for something that normally would load in a second or two. Interestingly, the PowerToys setting app refused to load at all. Now, it turns out that it actually didn't refuse to load. I just didn't wait the 5 minutes or more that it took to actually load it before I killed things. So if I looked at Task Manager, it was actually showing a process, powertoys.settings, which I presume is the process that actually shows the settings. It was showing up in Task Manager. Now, Malwarebytes was showing as taking 68% of CPU, which is normally sitting at 0%. But me being stupid, I just didn't pay attention to that. Next. So I rebooted. Problem again when I tried to access PowerToy setting. Problem again with other programs taking a long time to load. Interestingly, if I didn't try to go to PowerToy setting, my computer seemed to work fine. It was only when I went to PowerToy setting or tried to go to PowerToy setting that all of a sudden all the other programs had problems loading and so forth. I uninstalled PowerToys, which took probably about 10 minutes to get the uninstall to actually work, rebooted, and I had no problems on my computer at all. I reinstalled PowerToys, and again, the problem returned. As soon as I tried to go to PowerToy settings, everything on the computer went haywire. Next. And so I decided to uninstall PowerToys and leave them uninstalled. Well, me without the PowerToys is not a pretty sight. I depend on several of the PowerToys on a daily basis, and it's a real pain for me not to have them available. But, hey, my computer was causing me all kinds of grief, so I'd rather have a working computer without the PowerToys than having PowerToys installed on a computer that was totally unusable. Next. So I checked with the PowerToys site on GitHub, where the repository is for that open source project, and I didn't see any obvious similarities to what I was seeing in their issues section. I left the PowerToys uninstalled, and if you want to refer to the previous slide, you'll understand how my state of mind was for the next couple of days. Next. 2 days later, I rechecked the issues at GitHub, and all of a sudden I saw something similar listed, and it mentioned high CPU utilization with Malwarebytes. And I thought, oh, I remember, I did see that Malwarebytes was using an unusually high amount of CPU. So I posted my information about testing that I had done, the results that I had gotten, and then I waited. Next. So I revisited the GitHub repository. I guess it was probably the next day, or it might even been the same day. All of a sudden, a few people were reporting problems with PowerToys and Malwarebytes. All of them were saying, or several of them were saying, that there was no problem if Malwarebytes was set to not scan PowerToys folder. So any anti-malware program out there, typically, like I'm using Malwarebytes Premium, so it's an on-access antivirus as well. And so you can tell it, okay, don't scan the following folders. All the antivirus programs will let you do that. And then someone reported that the Malwarebytes forum on the Malwarebytes site had a thread about this particular issue. So I installed PowerToys, and I just temporarily disabled Malwarebytes And all of a sudden, everything was fine. I could access PowerToys settings, no problem. My other programs were running, no problem, so forth. Enabled malware bytes, and all of a sudden, I couldn't access PowerToys setting again. So I went over to the malware bytes forum, and there was a report there that malware bytes had actually released an update to fix the problem. I forced an update to malware bytes. It probably would have occurred automatically within a couple of days, but I did an update immediately, and the problem was fixed. So, in conclusion, I highly recommend that you persevere when you have problems on your computer that are not explained easily to something that you've done wrong. It's worth pointing out that some software problems can be really, really hard to diagnose and fix, especially if it's an interaction between two different publishers. So they are typically going to blame the other one if you can identify it as being two pieces of software. They quite often will just say, well, it must be the other guy's problem because we're not seeing any problem here. Try and do what you can to communicate with the publishers, though. Give them the information that might help them to actually fix it. For the PowerToys, the GitHub repository, the developers are there. They're very, very helpful. They're really responsive to any problems that people are having, and they really do try to fix the problems. Be willing to test out suggestions. So if they suggest to you, okay, you're having this problem, please try this. You know, sometimes it can be laborious to actually go through the suggestions and actually try out these things and report back whether it fixed the problem or whether it didn't help. Now, in this case here, Clint Retkus, who happens to be a lead on the PowerToys, he was in the forum, and he said that, okay, it sounds like we can, we've got this resolved now. He was recognizing that it really seemed that the root cause was malware bytes, because malware bytes had come out with a fix, and all of a sudden the problem went away, and then he closed that as being completed. And so anybody else who was going on the forum there or on the GitHub repository would be able to see that entire thread, what it was that caused the problem, what it was that resolved the problem, and then they can move on to dealing with other issues. And next. And now you'll see Chris at the computer with the PowerToys installed. That is a DALL-E 3 image, by the way. And it was interesting when I tried to generate these ones. I tried man at computer looking at the screen or something like that. And it didn't really look a lot like me. So I tried, oh, man with glasses looking at the screen. And it still didn't look an awful lot like me. Man with glasses and beard and mustache looking at the screen. Still didn't look like me. I finally got to it when it said, a balding older man with glasses and a beard looking at the screen. So sometimes even with DALL-E 3, although you can get high quality images, you might have to try a bunch of different prompts before you get what you want.
So Natalie's asking, Chris, were there issues reported for any other antivirus programs?
No.
And it was noticed that PowerToys update is waiting to be installed on my computer.
Yeah. It was specifically Malwarebytes Premium that was bogging down, and it was some interaction where it was trying to scan the settings app prior to allowing it to load on that computer, and it was some conflict in there that it was doing something. So it was strictly a Malwarebytes interaction with a specific module that was in the PowerToys. So I wouldn't expect it to occur with any other program at all.
Okay, and Tom's put a comment in the chat, which I think you should explain, Tom. He says also, don't scan the NARSOC utilities.
Yes, there are a whole bunch of utilities from a provider called NARSOC. They're all free, and apparently there are a variety of malware programs or systems that use them because they give you kind of low entry, low easy entry to the operating system to a variety of things. I use them for some things. For example, you can turn all your monitors off with a single command and other stuff like that, and it will give you a whole bunch of information. If you Google NARSOC, you'll see them, and there's a whole bunch of them that this fellow has created. They're all, you know, fairly simple and separate, but obviously they can be used to take a look inside your system, and malware likes that. So I use them, but I have excluded, I have a folder with all the NeurSoft utilities in it, and I've excluded that from scanning by Windows Defender and other places because they're so often identified as malware. But you may find the utilities useful if you go to the NeurSoft website for your own purposes.
So just to be clear, Tom, these are like false negatives or false positives, right? It's identifying them as a virus. It's not really a virus. It's just that they don't like the things that it does, or are there really viruses in there?
Viruses use bits and pieces of the NeurSoft utilities to look into the operating system rather than writing, you know, more complex things, which they would have to do. So that is a it's NeurSoft kind of exploiters that are the problem, and because they use bits and pieces of NeurSoft, that's why some virus recognizers, virus checkers, identify that as indication of malware. And of course, it can be. So it's worthwhile. But if you do download the NeurSoft suite, it's worthwhile. Turn off the scanning of it, or you'll get a whole bunch of misidentified viruses.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so what do we have next? We have a share here. I'd actually posted this in the members forum. It's actually a really good article about open source software. And it includes a whole bunch of programs that you've heard about, LibreOffice, Inkscape, VLC, those kind of things. And there are 22 programs in total, which a lot of them are really good. I use a lot of them and highly recommend them. So it's an article that's worthwhile taking a look at. And it generated a couple of replies in the forum, so if you haven't seen those, Harvey Hope recommends a program called Xamarr, it's actually a website, xamarr.com, which is an online file converter and compressor. So if you want to convert files, this thing will let you do 1,200 different file conversions online without actually downloading any actual software to your computer. So it's worth.
Yeah, just before moving on that, I went to the site. I don't see Harvey here on the call tonight, but I went to the site and I checked it out, and it looks like for free you can get two conversions per 24-hour period for free. If you want any more than that, you would have to actually pay for an account, and I forget how much it was, but I think that most people, if you're converting files, you're probably not converting a dozen files a day sort of idea. So it's the odd thing that you periodically will come across that all of a sudden you get some file format that you want converted. And so two a day is probably good enough for most people. But just be aware of the fact that they do limit you to two per 24-hour period for free. But an amazing number of conversions that can actually happen on there, 1,200 different conversions. It really is quite the site.
Yeah, but as you say, Chris, that's probably okay. Most people, you want to convert one file right now, and this is probably a decent option if you can't find the other software that will do it.
Exactly.
I actually had an issue with a friend's computer. She has an Excel file that's obviously corrupt, and Excel won't open it. So I checked on the web to see if there are any online products that would open corrupt Excel files, and I found one that said it would. And problem is, if it opens it, it then wants you to charge you to actually download the result or something. But in actual fact, it didn't make any difference because the online option couldn't open the file either, so didn't really help. Anyway, if you want to do file conversion or compression, there's a site that offers those services. And Jeff sent an option for a site called tinywow.com, and it has a whole bunch of tools for managing PDF files, image manipulation, video, writing with AI, and a whole bunch of file management tools. So if you're interested in any of those kind of options, that's certainly a place to go and look and see what they have available. Okay, next up we have a loony bit from our good friend Stu in Shawinigan.
Yes, television. You guys remember that?
Is that something on YouTube but different?
Yeah, sort of the great grandpappy of YouTube. The CBC Dragon's Den had a little item last week, and it was a browser extension that is for Chromium-based web browsers, and it kind of sounded like it did what Brave is supposed to do, which I'm already using. So I wasn't too crazy about looking at it, but, controls your data and what websites can see about what you're doing, and your tracks. Verbal diarrhea there. And it rewards you for your browsing, like Brave is supposed to do. Now, I haven't actually tried this yet because I spent some time reading on the website to try and get a handle on it. It sort of reads like the PC Optimum of web browsing extensions. You get points. You get something like 3,000 points for joining or referring a member, or 5,000 points for this and that. And it's all redeemable. 5,000 points equates to $5, like PC Optimum. You get 1,000 points, it's $1. I don't know why it isn't 100 points is $1, but I guess 1,000 sounds better than 100. Anyway, good marketing there. Arlene Dickinson invested money in it, so it was successful. The pitch, I mean. I don't know about the extension yet because I haven't tried it, but the website is getcider.com, spelled in a funky new age kind of way, not cider like the beverage. Cider like the cyber with a dur after it. And I couldn't really figure out, going back to the points thing, I couldn't really figure out what the redemption thresholds, if any, what they are. So they were clear about so many points equals so many pennies or dollars or whatever. They didn't say how you get them out. You have to sign up for an account on their website, and then you can get an app for your particular browser. And I believe a mobile app is coming. And that's all I remember right now.
Well, the thing that I remember off of that, which is an aside, I guess, is that Robert Herjavec, who is one of the dragons back from before, he's threatening to sue them. After Arlene said she was going to invest $250,000, he said, "Oh, where should I send my my lawsuit to? Is it Arlene or you guys?"
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes they play it up a little bit on the show.
Yeah. I think this was all based on just the name of it. It sounded too much like something Robert has in his stable of products. Yeah,
he's a cybersecurity guy, so he's probably got a million patents of some sort. But anyway, it exists now. It's out there. I was thinking about putting it on my version of Edge that I can't delete off my Windows computer. And I only use once in a blue moon, just for the test drive purposes, and see how the extension works out.
I checked that the Dragon's Den video, and they were asking for $180,000. Arlene offered them $500,000 for, I think, 10% of the company, and they settled at this $250,000 for 5% of the company. So the valuation of that thing is pretty high. Yeah. I have no idea what it does, but I think it's going to work, so we'll see.
I think our view is going to lose their shirt on this one.
Yeah, you might be right. Okay, thanks very much, Stuart, for that. We look forward to some more loony bits in the future. Okay, so I have a brief follow-up on this series I did on PC Manager and speeding up old computers. And if you remember, I'd said that one of the options in PC Manager was to go to Windows Update. And this is the screen you get. And I said, well, I can see the update here for regular update for Windows 10. And there's a antivirus update for Windows Defender. And what I didn't know was where it finds all these driver updates. Because when I go to my regular Windows update, there's an update to Windows, but there's no driver updates. And I couldn't figure that one out. But the trick is, you have to look at view optional updates. Now, I never look at this thing because if they're optional, I don't bother installing them. But if you go to the optional updates, in this particular case, there's nothing except there's this entry that says driver updates with a chevron. And chevrons are good. You can always click on chevrons. And if you click on the chevron, suddenly you find there's a whole bunch of driver updates available. And the text here says, if you have a specific problem, one of these drivers might help. And some sources say, if you don't have a problem, don't install the drivers. So I guess that's why they're there as being optional. Anyway, that's the story behind the driver updates that show up in PC Manager and where to find driver updates if you happen to need them on your Windows system. Okay, and that is everything that we have prepared material. So we are into the last 10, which is actually the last 17, I think. So if anybody has any questions or comments on what you've heard or things that you'd like to share, now is the time. So you can either open up your microphone, ask your question, or put something in the chat, and we will follow up from there.
Just one note, one of the 22 programs that they mentioned in that web page from PC Magazine is Scribus. And I used Scribus a couple of months ago to create a newsletter. And it is fairly reasonable to use. I can't compare it with anything else because I haven't used any other newsletter editor. But, you can create columns, you can move them around, they will continue, you can say continue on page, whatever. And I found it quite useful for a newsletter. I don't know what software is used to create the OPCUG newsletter. Maybe someone who does that could comment.
Yes, it's a Microsoft product. Can't remember the name of it right now. It's a desktop publisher type app, which is like Scribus.
Probably MS Publisher at a guess, because
they have
something that's called Publisher.
It's Publisher. Correct. Okay, Chris, there's a couple of questions. Same question in the chat window for you there.
Yeah, so one question is, is DALL-E free? If you go to the OpenAI site, which they're the people who actually own the code and the large language model behind ChatGPT as well as DALL-E. You're rate limited if you go directly to there. And I forget what it is. It's been a while since I've actually used that site directly. And it looks, I'm just looking at it right now, and it looks like DALL-E 3, it looks like it's sort of built into ChatGPT, probably ChatGPT 4 at this point. And for that reason, I recommend that you actually go to the Microsoft site to access DALL-E 3. And you just go to Bing Images, if you do a search on that. It's in the chat where you actually go to for that, the URL. So if you go there, Microsoft made, I forget what it is, $10 billion investment in OpenAI. And I think what they got in return was the ability to use any of the latest tools, including ChatGPT 4 and DALL-E 3, in their web portal. So if you go there, there's no rate limiting, and you do get the latest tools from OpenAI if you use them from the Microsoft site. So I recommend you go about doing it that way. And right now, there is no charge for it. ChatGPT-4 is now being rebranded as Copilot from Microsoft. And there are going to be some aspects of Copilot that are going to be available for free, but there are going to be some aspects of it that won't be free and will require subscription to access. And I haven't delved into it deeply, so I don't know all of the nuances on it. But they've been saying that Copilot, they're using it for on GitHub, I think it is, for programmers to be able to use, and they are charging for it there. And apparently they say that they are losing $20 per user per month currently on providing this tool through GitHub. So expect Microsoft to start trying to monetize some of this. I suspect a lot of it will remain available for free, but really intensive use of their large language models, it looks like they are going to be really trying to charge for those. So hope that answers that question.
Yeah, Microsoft are charging for their code AI system on GitHub.
Yeah.
I've been using AI quite a bit, just directly on AI.com or ChatGPT. I'm using my Google account. And I actually haven't run into any kind of delays or limitations on the number of things I've asked it. And it's been working very well.
Yeah, one of the things, if you go to the OpenAI site for free, you get ChatGPT 3, right?
Three, yeah.
And if you want, and that gives you information that from a programming point of view is probably perfectly fine because it doesn't change that radically over time. But if you try to ask, you know, who's the current Prime Minister of Canada, they are probably going to come back and just say, oh, the information we have is only current as of, and I forget what the cutoff date was for
China.
2021. Okay. So you can't get information that is more current than that. If you go through any of the Copilot stuff with Microsoft, it will be using ChatGPT-4, which is actually more up to date.
Yeah, I've actually been using it to write and debug computer code.
Yeah.
And it's very polite. If I point out it has a problem with the code, it says, oh, I apologize for that mistake. maybe you should try doing this, and that.
Well, at least it isn't like that article that I read in Computer World where it'll argue with you and say, no, I'm right. You're wrong.
Okay, Elizabeth's asking if that gobbledygook in the corrupt file, are they machine-readable characters? I guess they are, but you know what they imply, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's that it's just reading blindly at that point what it found, and it is corrupted, and so it's just, you know, random hexadecimal codes. So you know, like the alphabet and numbers is a very limited subset of the Unicode character set, and so potentially you can have, you know, thousands of characters in there. And so I think it's just, it was corrupted. Garbage information was there, and it is just trying to spit out the garbage information that it found.
So Karen's asking Bridget, a hardworking newsletter editor, if it's Microsoft Publisher or Microsoft Designer. And I think Bridget earlier in the chat there said Microsoft Publisher.
Yeah, it is Publisher that Bridget is using for the newsletter. I can attest to that.
So does anybody have any idea why Excel files get corrupt, going back to my friend's problem? I mean, it's a fairly simple spreadsheet. I got no idea why it would be completely corrupt. And just out of interest, Excel does have a number of ways of trying to recover corrupt files. If you try and open it, it'll tell you it's corrupt. But if you click on one of those chevrons, it gives you some options to repair or to just bring in the data or try and find the formulae, that kind of stuff. So there's a whole bunch of things you can try. This particular file was completely corrupt and nothing I did anything. So I don't know how files like that get corrupted.
Off the top of my head, if it only happens with Excel, that's one thing. But if it happens randomly with various files, I would suspect some problem with your disk, and I would look to possibly replacing the disk before you have completely unrecoverable data for everything that's on the disk. If it is just Excel, I don't know myself why Excel would periodically create corrupted files.
I think it was even more specific than that, Chris. I think it was one particular Excel file. Other Excel files were working normally.
Yeah.
Well, I think the most common reason for files to go bad is that you have, for something interrupted the file save, whether it was a shutdown or something like that. For that SD card with all those problems, it's probably the electrons for the particular things leaking out and leaving behind invalid information, in particular the size of the disk. And I would be worried about that SD card and not trust it in future, at least not solely. Also, by the way, if you are using SD cards, it's far safer to format them NTFS rather than FAT32 or XFAT, because NTFS has a bunch of extra error avoiding things. There is some overhead, some storage overhead with NTFS, but it's a far more robust file system than any of the FAT or FAT32 or XFAT.
Good point, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm not really concerned about it. This is an SD card that's basically hooked up to a real-time backup system for my data drive. So it's a fairly small backup system. It's probably the fifth version that I have on various disks, so if it goes bad completely, it's no great loss. So Stuart's noting that if you're a mobile user, Samsung is right on the cusp of releasing Android 14, and note, for eligible devices, so if you're not receiving updates already, you won't be getting Android 14. And Apple's iOS 17 is imminent as well.
Lots
of potential for problems, he says.
Yeah, I actually did the update to Android 14 on my Pixel, and it went fine. I didn't notice anything dramatically different, but I haven't actually looked to see what actually changed and presumably improved on it. I think there are some improvements to the Photos app, or the camera app on it. But, I haven't really looked at it myself. But the update went smoothly, and I had no problems with it.
And Stu notes that Pixels are always the first.
Yeah.
Ditto for me with my Pixel 6. Android 14 installed well. I think it fixed a couple of minor problems. I forget what they were. So I'm happy.
There's a question for you again, Chris.
What is Google Pixel?
Yes.
It's the phone from Google. So it's Google's branded smartphone. They call them the Pixel. So they're currently at Pixel 8, I believe, and 8 Pro. I have a Pixel 6, and I'm not about to change to anything updated. They are premium phones. There are a lot of people that are currently saying that the Pixel 8 Pro is the best smartphone on the market nowadays, and certainly from a camera point of view, it is the most advanced phone camera and software. that is available on the market these days?
The best iPhones are very competitive with that, like iPhone, I think, 14 Pro, or are they up to 15 now? But they're quite competitive.
They're pretty close. And in actual fact, there are some things on the hardware side that they say the Google Pixel 8 Pro, not the standard 8, but the 8 Pro, has leapfrogged. And one of them is in resolution. So the Apple phones are still doing pixel binning. So even though they will say it's a 50 megapixel sensor, you end up with a 12 megapixel image, because they do pixel binning where they combine multiple photo sites into a single pixel in the output resolution. Whereas with the Pixel 8 Pro, they are allowing you to do no pixel binning, and you will end up with truly a 50 megapixel image out of that, if that's what you want. So there are some advances like that. They say also on the software side that Google has done some pretty nifty things with improving things like night sight and various aspects of the camera app itself and how it does its computational photography, that they've done some significant enhancements at the Pixel 8 Pro level.
Also, I'm not sure about iPhones, but the Pixels from 6 on, and I think from 3 on, they do a lot of the translation and voice recognition right on the phone. So your voice and stuff doesn't not go over the internet. There's a lot more privacy, surprising from Pixel, but they put it on the phone. There's a lot more AI. In fact, I mean, they characterize their phone as being very smart AI, while rather than being speedy like the iPhone, which tries to speed along games and other stuff. One thing the iPhone does have, which the Pixel does not have, and has had it for at least a couple of years, is they have photogrammetry. You can actually take a picture. I think it has lasers, and you can actually create a 3D model using it. And they've had that for a couple of years, which might be interesting to some people. It's been used in a variety of projects I've seen on YouTube where they want to create a 3D model of something that already exists. And that might be interesting to some people.
Yeah. On the
There's
AI
a couple of updates in the chat window here. Serge Eric is suggesting to fix Office files, including Excel, try Data Newman Office Repair. And there's a link there, so I will try that. Kara wants to know, where do they sell Pixel phones, because she never sees them advertised? And Karen says she got hers Pixel 6 at Costco. And our Pixel guru is Chris and Linda, so they can tell us.
Well, you can always buy it through the Google store directly, and you'll get an unlocked device that should work on anybody's network. And then there are some of the carriers that do carry the Google Pixel phones as part of their standard stable. One thing before we wrap up for tonight, which I thought might be kind of interesting too, is that...
Maybe you could say that we got them at Virgin, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Virgin had, at the time, Virgin was selling them.
At the time, Virgin
well.
Was carrying them.
All. Yeah. Interestingly, on the AI front, and Tom mentioned how a lot of the phones are doing their own processing locally, this is something that we may be seeing coming out in Windows 12, that it will offload a lot of work to an NPU, which is a neural processing unit. And so this is a chip that, along with your central processing unit and your graphics processing unit, will do a lot of AI stuff locally on your computer. And Microsoft is actually looking at this as being a benefit for their Copilot, where a lot of the processing, rather than being offloaded to their data centers, which put a huge load on there, a lot of it is going to be able to be done on the device itself, and then maybe just more complex stuff will end up getting offloaded to Microsoft's backend servers and so forth. So we're going to see probably more and more talk about neural processing units being included in the hardware on PCs. And it sounds like, from what Tom was saying, that we're already seeing some elements of that on the smartphone side. So cool stuff.
There's an interesting note here from Tristan. He says, apparently for Pixel 8, Google is going to provide updates for 7 years. So,
yeah,
so that rubs off on a number of phone manufacturers.
Yeah.
That's security updates. I think there's still for OS updates and feature updates, there's they have increased it to 5 years, which is still more than almost any other smartphone seller.
Yeah, and then to me, security updates is what really matters. Feature updates, you can look at it and you can say, okay, if it's nice enough, yeah, I'll upgrade to a newer phone. But security updates, I mean, you really want to make sure you're getting security updates. And so when something is no longer getting security updates, I get real nervous about continuing to use that device because it could be compromised at any point.
And that's really insidious because
yeah.
you only get updates once in a blue moon from OEMs, and then they suddenly stop. But you don't notice that because you haven't been getting them regularly.
Yeah, that's true.
Pixel has an update every month.
Yeah, that's the thing. One of the things I really like about Google and their Pixel is updates come out quickly, and they address issues really fast.
On the second Monday of every month.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of having a custom ROM in your phone is that you get those monthly updates because they're publicly available.
Yep.
Okay, everyone. We're at the witching hour here, so let's just say, call the questions to an end and just wrap up by saying that our next Q&A will actually be next week, October the 25th. So as usual, if you have questions or things that you would like to share or your dog would like to share, send us a note to suggestion box and we'll put you on the agenda. So I hope you found the thing interesting tonight and lots of good material. Thanks everyone for providing that, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks.